Let Him Go Barefoot is a podcast that dives into all things parenting and education through the lens of mindful awareness. Conversations aim to bring forward patterns, beliefs, and attitudes that shape our expectations and ideas about what it means to raise healthy children. With a blend of science, ancient wisdom, and intuition, we will explore ways to support, nurture, and connect with our growing children while also nurturing and expanding ourselves. I am grateful you are here.
Welcome back, Carla. I'm so happy to have you again. It's been a year and a half since we spoke the first time on episode 13, I believe. I'm going to double check that. Nope, sorry, episode 14. And at that time, you were Carla, the unschooling mama. So yes. You can give us an update on what you've been up to and also the changes that you've implemented. And then our main conversation today will be on teens again, but a little bit more specifically about the intellectual and academic side of the teen years in unschooling. So thanks again for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm happy to be back and to share. I love your content and I'm just excited to have this conversation. For a little bit of history, teeny bit, my name is Carla Marie Williams. I am the unschooling mama of six kids who are now 21, 20, 18, 17, 16, and almost 15. So it has been a while since I've been on and a lot has transpired since then.
I heard you take that big sigh. I was like, whoa, that's a lot.
Yeah, so much. And so we just, in 2020, we graduated or launched, however you want to put it, our oldest two children. And then in December of 2023, just a few months ago, we launched three more. And so right now I have one active unschooler, although learning never ends. For all the rest, I have one active unschooler who is almost 15 here at home with me. And, you know, the other three are still at home, but they are working toward their goals and dreams. And so that's kind of what has changed is that, I went from six to four to one. So that is a major, major shift for me and for him, because we did so much together and played off of each other. And now the other kids are gone all day and working. The oldest two don't live at home anymore. And it's just he and I. And we're looking at each other like, what are we supposed to be doing? But we're figuring it out as we go. He's a very independent fellow. And so, he lets me know when he needs me. And most times he doesn't. And so I'm fiddling my thumbs and figuring out what I want to do with the rest of my life.
Right.
So, yes. And I only have 1 year left with him because he'll be attending a regional tech school for mechatronics and engineering. Starting the fall of 2025, similar to his older brother who spent 2 years in avionics. So, yeah, it's going to be.
Well, that's amazing. And I want to ask you a couple questions about that. So when you say launched, can you give us a little bit more of an explanation?
Absolutely. You know, usually people use the word graduated, and sometimes I use them intertwined, especially when I'm talking to somebody that doesn't get the unschool world and how we think and move about in our lives. Graduated always has the connotation that there is this predetermined checklist that you and hoops that you have to jump through in order to be considered validated, right, and ready for the world. When I say launched, to me, it's a very individual path and for each kid. And so when they launch, to me, they are ready for whatever is next in the direction or path they've chosen for themselves. And so, that's kind of the difference in why I use that word, because it doesn't have an age attached to it. It doesn't have a grade level attached to it. It has a readiness attached to it. Am I ready for the next step? And there, I'm at the end of where my parents can provide the resource, the knowledge, the wisdom, the information. And now I need to step into, maybe it's the military, maybe it's college, maybe it's starting my own business, maybe it's, you know, getting a job on another level, you know, pursuing a career path or whatever the situation is. When they are ready to go to that next level, that's when they are launched. And we've done that with our oldest 5 and are doing the same thing with our youngest.
Okay. Well, then let's start back kind of a few years before the teen years. And
okay.
You know, can you explain to us the process that you use to sort of to support their paths, their uniqueness, and what they need in order to launch? And when, okay. And the other piece of it too, I just wanted to add is that, you know, when you're talking about the idea of being launched, it sort of makes me think the difference between needing mom and dad regularly and needing that constant, not necessarily constant, but that input from mom and dad pretty regularly to, I've got it. I'm mm-hmm. good. You did everything you needed to do. I am on my own for the most part. Not that you're not needed, not that right. you never asked questions or consulted, but it's just such a different relationship now.
Absolutely. An example of that is, you know, one of my kids that is starts college in the fall. Well, 2 of them possibly, but 1 definitely. And he's getting used to the fact that, you know, he has a job. I can't intervene on with issues on the job. I will not, put it that way. And so teaching him how to walk through those things and navigate those kinds of relationships and issues. And then having a college professors and college advisors that he is responsible to communicate with and be in touch with and build relationship with outside of me.
Yeah.
Mom did everything for so long and now it's on him. And it's the same with, you know, all of my other kids and in their endeavors. They're learning how to navigate and represent themselves and their needs and all that kind of stuff. So it is definitely different. Mm-hmm. But, you know, backing it up a couple years and how we supported that. Wow. With 6 children, you're trying to figure out which examples to use. But overall, we have always kept our eyes open for their natural gifts and talents. We've always kept our eyes open for the things that they were interested in the moment. What we tried not to do in their younger years was peg them into a career path or into their life's work as if, you know, I played piano for 5 years in elementary school and now, you know, mom and dad want me to be a concert pianist and I don't want to do it anymore.
It's such good advice.
And one of the things that I always let parents know is that no amount of money, no amount of effort and time spent on one particular interest has to equal their life's work, nor is it useless. So you may have a kid that's doing something and into, you know, digging deep into an interest for 2-3 years, and then suddenly they change up. That was not wasted time, money, or effort. All of it is building towards something, and every skill that they gain, all the knowledge that they gain is going to benefit ultimately what they choose to do. And they may or may not. One thing that I always tell my kids, they can change at any time. I myself have had 4 distinct careers in different industries. And right now I kind of toggle between 2. Same output, same in the same way through writing and speaking, but 2 different topics that sometimes, you know, mold together. But it's important that they know that they don't have to know what they want to do for the rest of their life. And we shouldn't put them in that box. But all they need to know is what they want to do now and what they want to do next. And as parents, we've just always come alongside them and supported them in whatever that was. Now, some of my kids, I have a son that is a pilot and he is proudly serving his country in Japan at the moment. But he was interested in aviation at the age of 10, when on a fluke, I planned a birthday party at, it's called the Air Zoo. And it is, you know, a lot of historic, planes and rides and simulators, just a really fun place to be. And I thought, oh yeah, that'd be a cool birthday party. And boom. Ever since then, he never wavered. Started flying at 12. You know, by the time he was 18, he had his student's pilot's license as well as his avionics and aviation maintenance certifications. So it never changed for him. And I have other kids where their focus has changed. And that's okay. So every kid's going to be different. You can't assume that you're going to, you know, it's not a cookie cutter process. You have to be open and flexible to what each child needs in whatever season they're in and not be afraid of change and shifting to something new. They may come back to the old thing. They may not, but those skills were not wasted. That it is going to assist them in whatever they choose ultimately.
Yeah, that is a powerful message. And one I will repeat is that, you know, you have to be open to flex, to change and allowing them to try new things. And because it's true, we cannot predict what they're going to do 10, 15 years down the line. Sometimes we can't even predict next week. So, you know, it's like that taking that pressure off of ourselves to say, as a parent, especially as a homeschooling parent, because I do think sometimes homeschooling parents have that extra added layer of stress of like, I'm doing things so differently. So if they quote unquote fail, it's all my fault. And I want to reframe it to, it's not about the failing. It's about letting them unfold in a much more natural way than these boxes that we do put them in the school setting. And then sometimes in homeschool settings, you know, it's more look at the individual child in front of you and let's monitor and modify and pivot and use these really reframing kind of words in support of them. And again, emphasis on the individuality, because what worked for your oldest son might not work for your youngest or the middle or whatever. And they're so different. And
absolutely,
you're right. I think too, as a mother and as a parent, you're also modeling. You're modeling how to live a life that's based on your interest and your skill set and showing them what's possible as an adult. So they don't feel like they have to have it all figured out by 16. And and that way they get the relaxation into living and learning and adding to their skill set as time goes on.
Right. Absolutely. And so there's, you know, it's just, excuse me, those younger years are just full of so much curiosity, and they're, you know, they're just open to so many things that I think our major goal, our major role during those years was exposure. All the things that we could expose them to, careers, industries, ideas, thought processes, information, people, places, we just try to just lay on the exposure as much as possible, just randomness, really, when it came to the things that we watched, the things that we read, the places that we went, the conversations we had, we just threw out all of the random stuff. Excuse me. And what happens with that is your kids start to find out what they're interested in and what they're not interested in. And both things are very valuable, you know, sets of information. This is me and this is definitely not me, but they don't know. I have a lot of parents say, you know, well, my kids don't have any interest. If your kid is breathing, your kid has interests. This is the thing about that, is that sometimes they haven't touched it, you know, experienced it or seen it yet, because the exposure has been limited. And so the more and more opportunities to expose them to new things, and that doesn't have to be an expensive, I'm not saying a trip around the world. Okay. A lot of people are like, oh, that just sounds like dollar signs. No, it can sound like the library. It can sound like the internet. It can sound like, you know, opportunities, you know, to watch documentaries. It can sound like, you know, regional trips, things available in your own city. You know, some of the field trips that we did were simply for exposure. They weren't someone's, none of my kids had interest in these things, but we went anyway just to expose them. What if one of them, if a spark was lit in one child because we happened to go to the chocolate factory, or we went to a manufacturing plant, or we decided to go to, you know, whatever the scenario was, because I was always very out of the box when it came to our field trips. you know, I had one child that would come home from every field trip and rebuild what they saw and experienced through Legos. Another child would do it in Minecraft. And so you knew that they were picking up on things in their own way. And no matter what age they were, they took in information on the level that they were in and they applied it to whatever they thought was of interest at that time. And so it's just important that if your kid does not know what they want to do, that's okay. There are adults that don't know what they want to do. That's okay too. So, you know, to box them in and like that is just unfair. So exposure, you know, just continue to do that. You know, when they get a little older into their teen years, they may find things, you know, two or three things that they're really passionate about. The older, that number may get larger or smaller, depending upon the person. And you're just there to support, to lend resources, lend wisdom and guidance and support.
And I love the whole idea of exposure too, because it's not always about finding something that your kids already love and are interested in. It's also showing them different ways of being and doing so that they know mm-hmm. what they don't like. And
right.
I know that, you know, I enjoyed plays and I was in plays when I was a kid and I enjoyed watching them. And then I took my kids to some and I'll never forget, my son was like, please don't do that again. Like,
right.
I don't really want to do that. And I'm like, wow, you know, cause he's my child. So I'm like, surely he's going to love plays. And he's like, no, thanks. I'm good. So,
right.
You know, that's an important piece of information for me to have. And, the idea that it's not always about the exact thing. It's about the amount of things, and they're all going into that bucket or that basket of their knowledge and their experience and their skill set building. Mm-hmm. So,
you know, it's, go ahead.
Oh, one thing I was just going to ask, but if this is taking you off topic, then definitely go back. Which was the idea that, you know, they might not know what they want to do. But were there some telltale signs for you that showed that they were completely attached and into something that they loved and you knew that it was going to be important to them?
Well, you know, I'll be honest with you. I, you know, having six children, we didn't have an unlimited income to just dive into whatever you felt was interesting today. unless it came from the library or the internet, we had to really, you know, determine where we spent our dollars. And so honestly, I asked my kids, do you want to continue to do that? Is that something that you would like me to investigate? Would you like me to get more information about that? Sometimes it was just a passing fancy, a question that they had, and they're moving on. A lot of times parents will hear their kid say one thing, and before you know it, they're signed up for four activities right. related to that thing. And the kid is like, I never said I wanted to do that. Mom gets excited and they're like, oh my God. And you just pull out all the stops, overwhelm them. And all they wanted to do was just ask a question mm-hmm. about the topic. And so, you know, it's just very interesting that some of my kids I could tell, and some had so many examples. I'll give you one example. My youngest daughter, she was, she's very artistic, very talented as a graphic artist, as a sketch artist, and as a fashion designer. She's very artistic, very creative. We had gotten to the point where she was designing handbags. She was designing clothing, dog clothes, doll clothes is where she started. And then she went into making me clothes, making herself clothing. She designed an entire line of clothing for teens, and we set up an entire photo shoot with three of her friends modeling her clothing. She measured them and made them all, you know, individual outfits with the same fabric, different patterns and pieces. And we did a photo shoot and we did all of that, and then we investigated and found her an actual fashion designer that wanted to do a mentorship program with her. And shortly into that, she said, I don't know if I want to do this. And we were like, whoa, what? Because we were so far in, you know, we were like, whoa. And she said, I think I want to be a crime scene investigator. And we're like, now, just for a little bit of backstory, that's not new information. She's always been into, you know, forensics and reading crime novels and mystery and watching John Walsh's shows. And so that's always been a thing. Mm-hmm. But we thought it was kind of a side thing because this other thing was so pronounced and she was so good at it that it kind of took us aback. So we were like, okay, you know, we told her, we were like, you're so talented in this area. If you ever want to come back to this, we'll support you in that. And she hasn't yet. It's been 2 years, to the point where her goal is to enroll in the police academy.
How about that? Well, and that goes to show you that whole idea too about how we as parents can get attached to some outcome.
Yes.
And that's hard because you see, because as an adult, as somebody who's had a lot of life experience, you see the potential there and you're just like, oh my gosh, I don't want them to waste, quote unquote, their potential in a particular area that they've gone so far in. And so we have to be careful of our own attachment to their outcomes and recognize that it's not our life story, it's theirs. Mm-hmm. And we have to try to do our best to allow that pivot and that transition because it's all learning and it's all going into that bucket, like I said, you know, and we have to give them that space to try it out. And the beauty is that they can do that in the comfort of still being supported by a family. Right. And then they have all these different paths that probably light up. But I love the fact that you said it was there all along. It's just that didn't bubble up until a little bit later.
And if you think about it, that career is built around creativity. To be able to solve crimes, you have to be creative and think, you know, outside of the
Absolutely.
Box. And so, you know, that's what I mean when I say all the things that your kids are interested in, they're all going to connect, but they're going to connect in ways that you may not be able to see right now. But eventually all those things will begin to make sense and you'll be like, oh, okay. And they may come back to that other thing in the future, but that doesn't mean that they are going to, you know, that it's going to be that exact vision that you are attached to, so to speak.
Right. That exact layout.
It's and I could tell you, you know, with every single one of my children, I can tell you different scenarios like that where we were just like, huh? But we were committed to this type of, you know, lifestyle and learning environment for our kids. So we checked ourselves and we were just like, okay. Okay, so you say you believe this, now you have to walk it out. Because you say that this is the, you know, this is the way that you want to do things and this is what you strongly believe about learning and how children learn and supporting them. Now, you know, here's the moment where you're telling other people how to do this. You need to walk this out. And we've had 6 opportunities to do that.
Yes. And you've talked to other families and you've seen so many different experiences play out. And so I mentioned at the beginning about talking about the intellect. And so I made a post recently that said, are unschoolers anti-intellectual? And then I also asked if unschoolers could be facing an epidemic of untapped potential if they don't follow the standard K-12 model. And, you know, that bubbled up for me because of the fact that there's so much fear that parents into their relationships with their kids, and not just because of unschooling, but just in general. I mean, we all do, right? There's no quote unquote template and there's no handbook. And so we then take this very unique path and wonder, oh my gosh, you know, what am I missing? What if this, what if that, what if this? And so we go through all these what if scenarios. And one of them is the idea that unschoolers, because of the word school, there's an implication that we're not academic or we're not intellectual and we're just playing and we're just like goofing off and it's all about pleasure 24/7. And, you know, like this hedonistic model of you're never going to do real work. So you commented, and of course I was like, oh, I got to get you back on here so we can talk because you've had such an interesting experience with your kids and the work that you do and the books you've written. So what do you say to those who fear that being an unschooler means being anti-intellectual?
Okay, so first of all, I think that unpacking what intellectual actually means, according to, you know, its raw meaning versus societal meaning, right? How we put people in boxes. And, you know, I'd like to think that intellectual means well studied. And that can be in any particular form. That can be any body of knowledge. That can be any expertise. Our society puts it in a box where it's based on the letters behind your name, or it's based on a grade, or it's based on the effort that you put into someone else's box checking. Mm-hmm. And so I'd like to, you know, distinguish between those two to share that that is hogwash. That is absolutely untrue. If I could just... anybody that has that opinion, if they could sit down for 5 minutes and talk to any of my children, they would be like, whoa, because they are well studied, well read, well informed, and have amassed bodies of knowledge that I could have never initiated through a curriculum or a course or even knowledge of my own. They've accumulated that knowledge because they've dove so deep into the things that they're interested in and passionate about. And so they are very intellectual according to the raw meaning of what that word is, right? Mm-hmm. But they may not be intellectual according to grades because we don't do grades, or according to checking boxes because we live outside the box, or according to, you know, the amount of letters that they get behind their name. I'll give you an example. My husband and I were two extreme examples of intellectuals. I am a college dropout. I've been extremely successful in the areas that I've pursued. My husband is about to get his PhD in public policy. Mm-hmm. It's a whole nother type of intellectual, right? But that doesn't mean that either of us are not intellectual, or one or the other. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, I do.
We're both very well studied, very well read, and have amassed a huge body of knowledge in the areas where we are experts and where we are passionate. And And that's kind of how I look at intellectualism, so to speak. But as a society, we kind of create this box. And if you don't have these letters behind your name, or if you do not have, you know, certain grades, so to speak, mm-hmm. and you and I both know that a grade does not represent the knowledge or the intelligence of a person. And so that's, you know, that opinion is based on societal influence and not based in truth.
Yeah, it's definitely based on that K-12 model where we shuffle kids through a very, very narrow set of expectations mm-hmm. that are very standardized. And I always think of unschooling as like taking the gate and swinging it wide open, and then there's this gigantic field, and you can just run in all different directions, you know?
Right.
And then so intellect is the ability to utilize the information that you learn and or pursue knowledge in a way that benefits you and helps you build on your skill set. And I you know, definitely have that same experience with my kids too, that, you know, if somebody from the schooling world would look at them and think, they didn't do this, this, and this, they didn't take this, this, and this class, they didn't do it in this order, therefore they must not be smart, or therefore they must not be academic.
Right.
When in fact, anytime they've decided they want to do something, they do it, and they do it so well. And that has always been, I don't know what to call it. It's just, it's like not only eye opening, but it's just almost like magical because mm-hmm. it feels so different than what we've been told is true about kids.
Right.
But the reality is it's not really magical. It's normal. It's actually mm-hmm. a natural process in living when you have an interest and you go for it.
Right.
You really do learn all the things you need to learn. So I think those fears associated with the unschooling, especially in the teen years, are overblown. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
It's interesting too, because giving them the freedom kind of opens up the space in their mind and curiosity to ponder, what they're wanting to dissect and figure out versus just filling their brain full of stuff and then regurgitating it. They're able to really answer questions that they have, be curious about things, you know, amass knowledge and skills in things that are so far outside of what the box checking process would even offer them. And it's just, you know, as a society, our kids are told what to think. You know, we're downloading information into their brains as if they're a blank slate without original thoughts and purpose. Mm-hmm. And it's just not true. Our kids come to us already with purpose. And it's important for us to see that and to support it and to, you know, encourage, you know, the learning and the exploration and curiosity. And, you know, one of the worst possible scenarios that I have found, and I see this in friends and family, is to have a midlife awakening that you have accomplished your parents' dreams and not your own. That is, and I don't want that for my kids. You know, we have a lot of, you know, a lot of people that are following the dream that their parents have, whether or not their parents wanted to do that and they failed. So they wanted, you know, their kid to accomplish what they didn't. Or maybe they're like, okay, well, there's no money in art, so you should be a doctor. You know, that kind of thing. Having them follow the dollars instead of the passion. Because especially in today's world, it used to be really scary to have a starving artist as a child. You know, a parent thought, oh, they're going to be in my basement for the rest of their life. but, you know, it's a really different world, you know, with social media and with the internet, ways to get your work and your passion and your repertoire, so to speak, in front of, you know, hundreds of thousands of people is a lot simpler than it used to be. You used to have have somebody of reputation discover you, whether it was music, whether it was art or dance. You had to have somebody important say, you've got what it takes. Where now we have the ability to put ourselves out there to perfect our skills and show ourselves to the world. And so that's a beautiful thing about the internet. You know, there are some scary things, you know, that I don't appreciate about the internet, but that's a beautiful part of it. And so we live in a different world now, and we need to think about that and give our kids the tools that they need to be able to really share what they have to offer the world and what their giftings and talents are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the gatekeepers have definitely been removed with the internet.
Yeah.
And it really does boil down to what the individuals are comfortable with pursuing, mm-hmm. and how far they want it to go and what kind of reach they're desiring. And the idea of like going viral or making millions of dollars on the internet, it's still not the norm.
No, it's not.
And you can still make a very good living, a comfortable living, doing something on a smaller scale.
Absolutely. So everybody's not going to, you know, be YouTube sensation making millions of dollars. Mm-hmm. But the thing is that your passion can be highlighted and you can share what you love with the world. And if you want to, you can make money doing it, you know, depending upon how you approach it. It's just that you have those options and the opportunity available. But, you know, I find this to be really funny, especially with parents who have children in a traditional learning environment. If we were just honest with ourselves, every single kid is going to follow their own path eventually anyway. So why waste 12 plus years trying to mold them into our ideal future when we can just spend that same amount of time supporting who they are and, you know, and what they really love?
Yeah.
Because it gives them the opportunity to build those skills and to focus on something that if we are over here checking boxes and grades and, you know, tests and things of that nature, they don't even have the time, energy, or confidence to pursue the things that really make them who they are.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to follow it eventually anyway. Why not use this wide open space to be able to encourage that?
Mm-hmm. You know, I was listening to a conversation, I think it was yesterday, day before, on the changing landscape of attitudes towards work. And it was really fascinating. Yeah. And the guy traced back sort of how we worked from the First World War to the Second and up through now and what happened in the pandemic. And what it really highlighted for me was the fact that our expectation of work as parents is mm-hmm. absolutely different than what our yes. children's expectations will be about work. And mm-hmm. it's not because they're lazy or indifferent or, you know, or trying to just seek pleasure constantly. It's the time is different. The expectations are different. The way that you can communicate and interact is so different that their input now is being considered more than it did when we were growing up. Like, you know, the whole idea of like, I would go into my boss and say, you know, these are some things I'm thinking about and I would like to do work this way. That we just never even talked about that. It was like, you come into work at this time, you leave at this time, you do your thing. Maybe every once in a while you might go in and ask for a raise. But now kids and the younger adults really do engage in that conversation much more readily. Mm-hmm. And I think that's powerful because you're truly in charge more so for how you spend your time and where you put your energy.
And, you know, sometimes it's generational too, how we approach things, because our generation, a lot of us did follow what our parents thought was going to be the best path, or, you know, go to the college our parents thought was the best college, live in the city our parents thought was the best city, all of those kinds of things. And our kids observe that and they're like, nah, I don't want that. Mm-hmm. They're seeing the hypocrisy and how our generation may have approached a lot of things. And although, you know, we talk about them, you know, every generation older generation talks about the next one, right? You know what I mean? All the negative things about it. Yeah. But honestly, the unwillingness to be disrespected in the workplace, the unwillingness to do something for 40 years that you hate, that's what we're seeing with our kids mm-hmm. and with generations after us. And, you know, I don't hate them for it. I think that that's, you know, staying in a place for 30 years that you absolutely despise sounds horrible. Mm-hmm. I would never want to do that. But sometimes we're looking at it through utility. They're looking at it through, I want to love what I do. Mm-hmm. And so, and that's personality as well, you know? But you know, it's just a different world. And we have to recognize that most of our kids are not going to spend 30 years on a job. Mm-mm. If they spend 10, be surprised, because they're always looking for more freedom, more flexibility, more money, I'm sure, which anybody would be. They're just looking for a different way, like you said, a different way of working. Like here in our state, I live in Michigan. During the pandemic, just about everybody was working from home. Mm-hmm. Those people, I have friends today that started working from home during the pandemic that are still at home.
Okay.
And the companies and the state of Michigan have sold buildings because they're empty. There's no need to keep that real estate because they are functioning and doing just fine. So work is different. And that's great for our kids. That's great for this next generation because they have the ability to, you know, in a lot of cases, not every job, but mm-hmm. they have the ability to be flexible and to demand more mm-hmm. than we had sometimes had the courage to.
Right. That the more say so. And then like, if mm-hmm. you employee and I want to do a great job for this company, mm-hmm. but I know myself and I know what would make me a better employee and feel more connected to the work. And what boss wouldn't want their employees to feel more connected to the work and actually bring their best selves into the setting to, you know, to either make more money for the company or secure relationships and those sorts of things. So yeah, it'll be interesting to watch how it continues to unfold and shape up. And I love the fact too, and this is something I've seen fairly consistently throughout my own friendships that I have friends with kids who've been unschooling pretty much their whole lives, is they have that confidence about them. Mm-hmm. And they know who they are. And they're not So there's sometimes where like my son will go to tell me something or what he's about to do. And I'm the one who has to like take a step back and not get involved because it's so different from what I was used to. Yes. And I was like, oh, okay, you're going to have that conversation. Good on you. You know, and I have to like be just, okay, stop talking. Because yes. I don't want to put my own spin on it because it's so different. And my experience mm-hmm. is not his experience. And he's taking control and taking charge and he's doing it his way. And I think that's an amazing thing. Why would we not want our kids to do that?
You know, it's very interesting. And I'm going to be sharing this testimonial on my social media. And my son did give me permission to share this, but it's very much along the lines of what you're saying. So if you don't mind, I'd like to share it.
Oh, absolutely.
He is 18 years old and on the spectrum and, you know, deals with several challenges, including dysgraphia and dyslexia, among other things, but for this particular topic. And he has been on his job for almost 3 years and just absolutely adored on his job. And what was it? A couple, maybe last summer, the job had a outing, you know, a fun outing planned for all of the employees. And my husband was present. And the owner of the franchise asked my husband if he could mentor my son to be a franchise owner.
Oh, wow.
And now this child, we've always known that he was a leader of leaders. Despite any challenges, despite any diagnoses, he is a leader of leaders and he's just that kid, right? Yeah. And so we were like, whoa, his plan after graduating or launching was to go to the military. And he's very passionate about being a Marine. His dad was a Marine. But when this topic arose, it kind of gave him, there was some confusion. What do I do? Which direction do I go? And so fast forward, he has decided to do both. And a recent opportunity arose for him to be promoted on his job in the direction of what he wanted to do. And there was a written test. So with dyslexia and dysgraphia, you know, mom's greatest fears have arisen, right? Mm-hmm. Because his entire learning process, we've always accommodated him and given, just like we do with any of our kids that have challenges, accommodated them, given them, you know, the confidence and to plow through any walls and things that try to keep them from accomplishing things. And so we've always given him other ways to express his brilliance, and brilliant he is. And so, but mom starts freaking out because there's this 6-page written test in order for him to be promoted. Mm. And he's been there 2.5 years. His desire is to climb as high as he can while simultaneously enlisting in the Marine Reserves. And so I tell him, do you mind asking them if they will allow you to do your test orally? He said, yeah, I can ask. So he asks the particular manager that is going to be giving the test, and she doesn't get back with him right away. And he's like, I'm not going to wait. He came home one day and said, I took the test today. I said, what? I took the test today. I said, did they give you it orally? He said, no, I took it written. And I was like, I mean, I was like, what? I said, so everything's okay? He was like, yes. So then they called him in 2 days later. They had just gotten his message about the oral test, but he already decided that he wasn't waiting and he wanted this, that he took the test. And he texted me 2 days later after meeting with him and said, Mom, I'm a trainer now. I'm a master trainer.
Oh, that's such a great story.
I'm trying not to cry right now because I'm like, we have these fears because we have our kids have these gifts and these talents that shine bright, right? Mm-hmm. And as unschoolers, we try to put them, you know, highlight those things and help them shine in those areas. But then there's these challenges that make us scared straight. Mm-hmm. And we don't realize that the confidence that our kids gain through highlighting their, you know, their gifts and talents and interests, that builds confidence for them to attack all those other challenges.
Absolutely.
And that's a perfect example. And that's why I asked him if he minded if I shared with my followers, because I'm like, there are a lot of parents out there that are so afraid that the challenge that their kid has is going to keep them from their destiny, from their purpose, from their, you know, what they really want to pursue. And I'm here to say, no, it doesn't have to. Mm-hmm. If you approach it like it will, then it will.
Yeah.
But if you give them that confidence, if you give them the confidence to just tear down those walls that are standing in front of them, they will go for it, even and shock you. Mm-hmm. Because I was terrified when he told me it was a 6-page written test. Because again, you speak with him, just knowledge flowing out 24 hours a day. But when it came to writing, it was a painful, literal pain in the hand and head. To be able to transfer that knowledge from his brain to paper. And so to take that on and say, I'm not waiting, I want this. This mama heart was just overflowing. So proud.
I believe it. I know.
So thank you for letting me share that, because it just.
I'm so glad you did. I'm so glad you did. And it's so funny too, because I was listening to you and I was thinking, you know, that was kind of one of my plans for wrapping up our conversation was to talk about the challenges and how we overcome them. And you just nailed it beautifully, which is you support their talents and their skill set and their natural abilities to the point where they are just mm-hmm. so confident that those things that are challenging are not going to feel like mountains to climb. They're going to just be part of the process. It's like, you know what? But because you do get so buffered and built up because you know you're mm-hmm. capable. And some people may even say the opposite of that was like, well, if you're only focusing on their strengths, then when they do have challenges, they're going to just completely crumble. But
I
believe that in the process, I do too, because I believe in the process of helping them build their skill set. They are challenges. It's not like it's just all skills and all challenge. It's mm-hmm. built in. Challenges are just built in the natural progression of living and learning. But when the kids have that growth mindset and they see that they're capable and that they know with the right, you know, attitude and right supports, they can do the things that they want to do. And he had such an attachment to the plan and what he wanted to do. He was fully invested. So he knew he needed to take that risk and to put himself mm-hmm. out there and do it. So it's a beautiful story. Such a great example.
Yeah, and he represented himself. He let them know, you know, my writing is mm-hmm. going to be a little crazy, but I need you to know that I'm invested in this and I can do this. Mm-hmm. And they were like, yes. And they gave him that. So now he no longer wears a red shirt. He now has a navy blue and white striped shirt. And his next goal, you know, we create goals at the beginning of every year. And they create goals for themselves. And one of his goals was to be promoted. Another was to buy a car, which he's about to do. So there are just all of these things that are confidence builders along the way, these little steps that just build up to the point where they feel like they can take on anything. And he said, my next step is a black shirt. And that's a manager.
Okay. I believe he's going to be there. You come back and tell us. I believe it too. Well, as a wrap up, I wanted to talk about that particular thing about the setting the goals and helping them and creating the foundational supports mm-hmm. for our teens. And, you know, what I know it looks different for each kid, and we've definitely touched on all the various ways it can look. But if there are some just take home messages, like two or three things maybe that you know are solid, tried and true ways to interact with our kids that can translate for all the different paths and all the different personalities, what would those be?
I would say number one, to set goals. A lot of times, you know, I find parents, they're just like, I don't know what to do with our day. We're just playing video games all day. We're just doing this. We're just doing that, which I don't want to minimize video games. Mm-hmm. But to set goals, you know, we've always done January through December as a cycle, so to speak. And so every January we set goals, or allow them to set goals. And then we, you know, kind of talk about them and ask them, what is it that we can do to support you, you know, in these goals? What do you need from us? Whether it's finances, a ride, encouragement, knowledge, resources. And so number one, setting goals. Number two, how can you support them in their goals? What do they need from you to accomplish those goals? And then number three, checking in. How are you doing toward those goals? Do you still value that goal? Do you still want to do it? Do you still have your, you know, we kind of do that mid-year usually. Have you changed your focus? Do you want to do something different, focus on something different? Do you want to stop something? Do you want to start something new? So checking in, number one, setting the goal. Number two, how in the world can I support you? What do you need from me to help you? And then number three, checking in, because that's going to help, you know, them spend their days working toward those things. So sometimes, you know, as far as accountability, I ask them, you know, so where are you at on this? You know, how are you doing with this? Just to remind them of the goals that they set. And I always laminate the goals that they come up with at the beginning of the year, and I put them on their bedroom wall as a reminder.
Wow.
And we check off. You know, one son, he wanted a PS5 this year. He was able to check that off last week. You know, the son that I was talking about, he got his promotion on his job. He's saving a certain amount of money. He's purchasing his car. He has all these things he wants to do. We're checking him off. And again, they may change. And so you just kind of remain flexible and supportive.
Well, and I'm going to add the psychological spin on this, and that is counting your wins.
Yes.
And there's something so powerful about seeing a goal through and knowing that you put the effort and the time and you created a habit. And that's kind of under discussed, maybe, maybe not. Maybe I feel like it's under discussed in our unschooling circles, which that, you know, there are, you do build habits, whether you are conscious of them or not. And I think the setting the goals is that conscious habit formation of looking at where you want to move towards and then doing the things that you need to do to get there. It's like the working back method, working backwards method. Mm-hmm. So I want to get on the other side of this river. So how am I going to lay the foundation to get there? And that is really important. And it's, you know, part of that healthy human behavior, which is knowing what you want. And so sometimes that means getting quiet. That means thinking things through. That means all the stuff you talked about at the beginning and the exposure, the adventures, the interacting with a bunch of different people. Mm-hmm. And then you get to know yourself better through the process. So I love that.
Absolutely.
Well, now you get to tell us all about the wonderful books you've written and where people can find you and how they can continue to keep up with what you're doing.
Well, I've written so many books.
I know.
10 books and 10 journals. I'm working on book number 11 and 12.
Oh my gosh.
All of my books are mom focused. Every single one. That's right. Just my jam. That's who I, my audience, so to speak. Moms from A to Z and throughout every season. But particularly homeschooling, unschooling books that I've written would be Homeschool Gone Wild and Teens Unleashed, as well as I've written it's kind of half motivation, half journal, Unschool Yourself for teens to record their learning journey. So those three would be specific to what we're talking about today, but they can find all of my books on my website at CarlaMarieWilliams.com, and that's Carla with a K, MarieWilliams.com. And I'm on social media, used to be Carla the Unschooling Mama, as well as Carla and the Sensational Six, but all of my social media has gone through a complete change, and is everything on YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook is under simply Carla Marie.
Okay.
As I transition into having all my kids being adults and just kind of bringing other elements of motherhood and the seasons of motherhood and just all the things that are, you know, both homeschooling, unschooling, as well as, you know, parenting in general. So that's where they can find me.
Thank you for listening. To learn more about guests on the podcast and to stay up to date on how they are showing up to make the world a better place for children and families, please check the show notes. To become a part of the Great Educational Awakening and to keep up with my latest writings, offerings, and workshops, be sure you're signed up for my Substack newsletter. You can also follow along on social media at Let 'Em Go Barefoot. That's LETEMGO Barefoot. If you are new to homeschooling, new to unschooling, or are simply unschooling curious but not sure where to start, we now have a beautiful 43-page downloadable guide that walks you through the how and why of self-directed education and child-led learning, as well as responses to common questions and concerns around academics, motivation, college, community, and more. You can find a link to purchase your copy in the show notes. Thank you so much for your support. As always, stay curious, stay connected, and stay aware. Until next time.